into another fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have a great show to share with you today that we had the honor of seeing this last weekend at the New York City Fringe Festival. So we're really happy that we're able to bring them on. Joining us today, we've got the creator and performer of that show, Victoria Montalbano, whose show, The Princess Strikes Back, as I mentioned, is part of the New York City Fringe Festival. There are three shows left. Three chances for you to catch it, April 15th, 20th, and 21st, and all shows are at Under St. Mark's. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. This was just such a fun afternoon, such a great time hearing a really, really wonderful story, and honestly, a relatable one for all of us out there. And the connections with anyone who likes, you know, any form of fandom, any nerdy kind of fandom, if you will, this is the perfect thing for you. But I'm doing a terrible job explaining the show. Why don't we go and welcome on our guest, who obviously is the expert. Victoria, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. I'm so excited that we get this chance to share your amazing show with our listeners. It was such a fun time. My inner child was discovering this great series, let's call it, you know, along with you. And I was just, everything about it was fantastic. I did not want the story to end. Why don't we start by having you tell our listeners a little bit about what The Princess Strikes Back is about?
Great. Well, it is about how my childhood crush on Han Solo from Star Wars has affected the rest of my dating life. So it's a lot of dating stories, but it's really, I think, about more than that, really about kind of maturing and growing up and kind of questioning is this thing that I've wanted actually the thing that will make me happy?
I love that. And I would love to know, what was the inspiration or the antithesis to create this work?
Well, I am a storyteller, and I started doing storytelling about 5 or 6 years ago now. I've lost track, maybe a little longer than that. But before that, I was like a theater kid. I've done theater my whole life. And for your listeners who may not know, storytelling is just kind of a narrative art form. It looks a lot like stand-up comedy, but instead of telling jokes, you tell just one story with a beginning, middle, and end. And it could be funny. Mine usually are, but it doesn't have to be. And so kind of that vulnerability comes a little bit from sort of how it was developed, which was through storytelling. So there's just kind of naturally going to be a little bit of like, well, in order to have a beginning, middle, and end, the subject of your story has to grow or change a little bit. And I'm the subject, so it's just personal. So, yeah. And the idea really came about because I knew I wanted to create a one-person show. I had never done it before, but I'd seen a lot of them. And I knew I had a lot of like dating and relationship stories, but I kind of felt like that had been done before. I didn't want to be just another like nearing middle-aged white lady with no real trauma, just like, oh, everyone needs to hear my story about funny dates I went on, you know. It just felt like that had been done. So I hadn't seen the original Star Wars trilogy in a while, because when Disney bought the whole thing with the IP, once Disney Star Wars, for a while, those original trilogy movies weren't available on stream anywhere. You couldn't like buy or rent them. And so unless you like had an old VHS or an old DVD, you couldn't really watch them. So when they started Disney Plus and all of Star Wars on there, I watched it for the first time in about like 10 years. And it kind of reminded me like, oh, right. I was so into Han Solo. That was like, for sure, my sexual awakening. And so I got the idea to kind of use Star Wars as sort of the way into the story. And then it felt like it was something different that I could feel comfortable developing, and it would be something new for people.
That is so fantastic. I love, and like I said, watching you discover Star Wars, I was like, literally there, I was like, I remember the first time I Yeah, I remember stumbling on these and getting like hooked into them. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
So I'd love to know, what has it been like developing this piece, particularly this current iteration that's playing at the New York City Fringe Festival?
Sure. Well, I started by, once I had the idea, I started by just writing kind of 8 to 10 minute stories about kind of relationships I'd been in. And actually, the first one I wrote is in the show about this like very kind of awkward sleepover I had when I was 13, when I was, you know, 12 or 13, as everything is awkward at that age. And that was the first story I told that kind of weaved Star Wars into it. And I wrote it. I was taking it to an open mic in Chicago where I live. And I literally finished it like an hour before. And so I got to the open mic and was literally just like holding the page in front of me and reading off of it. Like there was no performativeness to it. I just knew a story I wanted to tell. And that sort of, it went over so well, even with no, like, the story was very well received. I loved telling it. And I knew that I could sort of build a show based on that. And so I started editing that story and then writing other ones. And based on the subject matter, I knew that the stories that I wanted to tell were about relationships, if you even call them that, dalliances, we should say, I can say, with men that were sort of Han Solo-ish in nature, that had that vibe, because I always wanted to be Princess Leia. And so that's sort of how I developed it, by going to open mics and book storytelling shows and telling these stories and really just telling them over and over, listening back to them, editing them every time. And then I sat down to try and kind of put them together into a full show. And so I started weaving in kind of jokes and short stories that connected them. And from there, I was supposed to do a, like, just very basic kind of stage reading. I got a spot on a show in Chicago that allows storytellers to do like a longer set. So it's a great way to try out something that's brand new. So I had a date to do that. I knew I had to have the first draft kind of done. So I put a period, I wrote the end, put a period on the end of that first draft, was ready to do it like a week later just to read it. And it was March 8th, 2020. So the world shut down and that was obviously canceled. And for a while at the start of the pandemic, I just sort of put it away. And I was, you know, I, to be very frank, still to this day work lots of day jobs, and I was an essential worker during the pandemic. So those first few months were a bit kind of stressful. When I wasn't working, I was at home just burrowing a butt divot into my couch and not being artistic at all. So after a few months, I kind of pulled it back out and I workshopped it. Honestly, I was like, well, I can't do a staged reading. So I made my friends Zoom with me and made them watch it over Zoom. So that was sort of my version of a staged reading. And then just sort of went from there. I got some professional coaching on the script as well, which was very helpful. And then was able to do a digital staged reading where there was more of an audience, but it was still over Zoom. And then the official world premiere was in July of 2021. So we had just had vaccines, but the world wasn't quite open yet for live theater. So I was able to do it with a very tiny in-person audience and then live streamed for the world premiere. And after that, I took it out on the Fringe Festival circuit. So what you saw in New York and what's in New York is very much the same show it was 3 years ago, script wise. But now I've been doing it live in person for 3 years. And so through that, I've gotten much more comfortable with the show. I'm more comfortable kind of ad-libbing a little bit, being more in conversation with the audience. It's, you know, less presentational than it was 3 years ago. So even though it's the same basic script, I think it's a different show than it was 3 years ago.
That is such an incredible journey with this piece. Wow. I love it. Now, with this great story, with this personal story of yours, is there a message or a thought you hope that audiences take away from it?
Well, I hope, I don't really consider it to be like a message, quote unquote. I'm making air quotes. Your audience can't see that. I don't think it has like a quote unquote message, like capital M message. You know, there are so many, you know, horrible things in the world that we can talk about. And this show is not that. But I hope people come away with it with a sense of hope that, you know, whatever, even if, you know, people, even if the audience is not currently dating or currently, you know, with whatever it is, I hope that people come away with a sense of hope that they can get what they want, but also a sense of like, it's okay. A sense of, I'm not saying this very well, but that's okay. I hope people come away with the idea that they've had some laughs, and if they see themselves in the show, which I think everyone can see themselves in the show, that they come away with the idea that, hey, we're okay and things can still get better too.
I love that idea. And I think it shines so brilliantly in your work. And I want to snowball off of that into my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to The Princess Strikes Back?
Well, the show itself is PG-13. I want to say that sometimes people see, you know, I'm wearing dressed like Princess Leia and all of the marketing and everything. So I think sometimes people see it and like, oh, Star Wars, my 8-year-old loves Star Wars. It's not for your 8-year-old, just so you know. It's not, like I say, it's not R-rated, PG-13. So it's for adults and teenagers. And I think the show is for everyone. And I don't say that just to be like, oh, I haven't narrowed down my demo. It's just because I think theater should be for everyone. I think anyone off the street should be able to walk into like a tiny black box, like under St. Mark's, and see a show, and they should be able to buy a ticket for it without it, you know, breaking the bank, and enjoy an afternoon or an evening of theater. And so I do think it's for everyone. I also think people see the marketing and say, oh, that's not for me. I'm not a nerd. I'm not a Star Wars fan. And I wanted to be very clear that you do not have to be to enjoy this show. I think sometimes nerd spaces can feel very kind of limiting, and the nerds have sometimes gotten a little bit snobby about their nerddom. And even myself as a nerd sometimes feel that. And so I wanted to be very clear, this is not just for Star Wars fans. It's not just for nerds. You don't have to know anything about Star Wars to enjoy the show. And honestly, some of my favorite audience members have been people who have never seen a minute of Star Wars. And because then they all make a reference to something that is in Star Wars and I explain it and they go, what? As if it was, you know, something they'd never heard before, you know, that wasn't really a surprise to anyone else in the audience. So I want to make it clear, the show is for everyone.
Of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better, pick your brain if you will, and we've kind of already been doing that, especially with this personal show of yours. But I want to ask our regular first question to you, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Yeah, I am very influenced by Mike Birbiglia, the comedian. He also does one-person shows, and particularly his show, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. Before I had gotten into storytelling or any type of like writing or anything like that, I had sort of been doing comedy in Chicago. I had done improv. I'm a recovering improviser is how I describe myself. And I dabble in sketch comedy, and I love doing comedy, and I love doing theater. In comedy, you do really have to like create it yourself. And I just wasn't sure how to do that. I didn't think really traditional stand-up was for me. And I kind of stumbled upon Mike Birbiglia's My Girlfriend's Boyfriend on Netflix or wherever it was streaming at the time. And he tells this beautiful story. He's definitely a stand-up, but he tells this beautiful story about how he met his wife. And it's this gorgeous one-person show. And I was just really floored how he could go from telling these like hilarious jokes to then just literally sitting on the edge of the stage and talking face to face with the audience. And as soon as I saw that, I said, oh, that's what I want to do. And so I'm very influenced by his work. And also particularly for this show, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, her Fleabag. If you don't know, that Amazon Prime show started as a one-person show. And I have not been able to see the full one-person show because of weird streaming rights or whatever, but I've been able to see clips from it, and it is just her on a stool the whole show, and she'll occasionally hop off of it to do a bit, or she's imitating a character and she'll like hop off the stool to do this thing, but most, and she always comes back to sitting on that stool and just talking directly to the audience. And so I really took that kind of model when I created my show as well.
Those are some wonderful inspirations. I love that. That is fabulous. So I know you've been very busy with your show, The Princess Strikes Back, especially here at the New York City Fringe Festival. But on off chance, have you seen any great theater you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
Well, I'm here for the New York City Fringe Festival, as I've said, and I've seen almost every night have gone out to see other shows at the Fringe. So there's some wonderful shows that I've seen there. I can recommend, these are all also only here for the next couple of weeks, so get in there quickly. But I really enjoyed The Importance of Being Anxious, which is also a one-person storytelling show, which is just wonderful. And I also really enjoyed a show called A Little Less Than Kind, which is sort of a contemporary queer retelling of Hamlet. And I really loved it. I went to drama school, so I'm a big, you know, theater Shakespeare nerd. So for me, it was great. I loved it. So those are a couple of great ones I've seen.
Two fantastic suggestions. In fact, two shows that we got to have on our show in our pre-festival coverage. So great, great suggestions there.
Sorry to interrupt. I do want to say also, those are two I've seen, but if you're listening to this and you like cool, weird theater, look up the Fringe Festival, because there are over 40 shows there that are all reasonably priced. They're all in the East Village. They're walkable venues from each other. So if you're looking, if that's something that interests you, just look up the Fringe Festival website and you'll find something that appeals to you there.
Absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. That is the perfect pitch for a Fringe Festival. Let me ask you, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Really, right now, the connection with the audience has been what's great. Since I've started doing personal storytelling and really kind of communicating with the audience, that's been my favorite. And I think some people, you know, young actors, at least, this was always a big question when I was in theater school, was like, how do you do the same show night after night? And you've been doing the show for 3 years. Doesn't it get boring? It never does, because truthfully, every single show is different, especially this particular show, because I do talk directly to the audience, and the audience is really a big part of the show. And I think sometimes when you are doing a traditional play or musical, there are, it can get a little tedious if you're doing a long run, but with this style of show, the audience keeps me on my toes every night. I love hearing, every audience is different. Every reaction to jokes is different. So I love that, keeps me in the moment and keeps me really, really thinking through the story every time I do it.
That is a fabulous answer. I love, love that answer. And that leads me to my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
So when I was in high school, we used to go, I grew up in Sarasota, Florida, and there is actually a lot of theater in Sarasota, and the Florida State University MFA program is located in Sarasota because they work with one of the equity theaters in the area. And so they would always invite high school classes to their show. So I saw almost every show that the grad students were putting on. And when I was maybe 16 or 17, they did A View from the Bridge, Arthur Miller's A View from the Bridge, which I had heard of but never read or seen before. And when it got to the climax of the play, something about it, I'm not a big crier, but I was sobbing. I was just uncontrollably sobbing by this play. And it was really the first time, even though I had been going to theater and doing theater and been a really annoying theater kid my entire life, that was the first time I really felt how like theater can really hit someone and really hit people emotionally. And that was one of my favorite moments that I've had at the theater. And if I could tag one more onto that, a similar situation about maybe 10 years ago now, the pandemic has made me lose all sense of time. But I was part of a festival in Chicago called the Young Playwrights Festival, which is through Pegasus Theater, where the theater goes out and teaches writing workshops in high schools. And there's a contest and they choose between three and five short plays every year to be fully produced. And one year I was acting in that play festival. And so high schools, we would do shows every day at 10 a.m. High schools would come in and see it. Sometimes it would be the playwrights would be there, and they were all high schoolers that were going through that program. And there was one teenager in the audience for one show, and it was also a very small theater, who didn't have the same reaction I had, but was not quite following theater etiquette, should I say, and was yelling back at the stage everything we were doing. And like, there was a play about a teenager who was in a coma and kind of what was going through her mind, and I was playing her mom. And I would say a line and the girl would be like, "She's in a coma, she can't hear you," and like yelling things back like that. And I love that moment because this was a girl who probably hadn't seen a lot of theater in her life. And a lot of the teenagers we had come in were like, clearly had been taught by their class, like, this is theater etiquette, this is how you sit, this is how you like, you clap when it's appropriate, you laugh when it's appropriate. And you can kind of tell, because I've been a teenager, that a lot of those kids probably were just sitting watching because they had to be there and not necessarily like loving it. And I could tell this girl was engaged in what we were doing. And isn't that the point of theater for teenagers, is that they're engaged with the material? So I didn't care that she was like yelling back and, you know, yelling things at the stage, because I knew she was engaged and listening. And it, even though it was a very different reaction to my reaction at the theater when I was a teenager, that was another moment where I felt that was the same thing. That was the same vibe. Theater had made something happen for her, you know? So those are kind of my twin favorite moments I've had in theater.
I love those. Those are fantastic. fantastic memories. Thank you so much for sharing those with us.
Of course.
As we wrap things up, I'd love to know, are there any other productions or projects you have coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Yes. Well, first of all, this show, The Princess Strikes Back, One Woman's Search for the Space Cowboy of Her Dreams, that's the complete title with subtitle, will be at three more Fringe festivals this year, as well as a few other performance dates in there. So you can, if not in New York and you're listening to this, I will be in, let's see, San Diego, Hollywood, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Minneapolis, all between now and the end of the summer. And so you can catch The Princess Strikes Back in any of those cities. And I'm also working on a new one-person show that should be hopefully getting its world premiere this fall in Chicago, and then heading out to tour on the Fringe circuit as well. And that show is called Timey Wimey Stuff, The Midlife Crisis of a Time-Traveling Space Archaeologist. And that is about sort of reaching middle age as an artist. And when you're reaching middle age as an artist in the pandemic, what that is like, and is through the lens of Doctor Who. So you can look out for that in the next year or so, kind of hitting the road again.
Wow. That sounds, first of all, I'm loving that this current show is going out on the road and more people will get to see it. But this new show you're working on sounds incredible. And it makes for a great lead into my final question, because as we need to keep tabs on you, you know, if our listeners want more information about The Princess Strikes Back or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Oh, in so many ways. I'm very available. So you can visit my website, which is victorianotvicky.com. And that's Vicky with a Y, victorianotvicky. .com. And that's pretty up to date about where I'll be headed, ticket links for any festivals I'll be at, as well as when the new show will be up and fully produced. And then you can also follow me on social media. I am at NotVicky4 on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook at Victoria Montalbano Comedy, and I'm on TikTok at NotVicky007.
Wonderful. Well, Victoria, thank you so much for taking the time to stop by to share more about your show. Thank you so much for that amazing performance this week. And it was absolutely incredible. And I'm in love with this show. I'm so happy that it's got these great legs. I can't wait for the next show. So truly, thank you so much for your time today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
My guest today has been the amazing creator and performer, Victoria Montalbano, whose current show, The Princess Strikes Back, is part of the New York City Fringe Festival. You've got three more chances to get to see it on April 15th, 20th, and 21st. And all of these performances are at Under St. Mark's. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting frigid.nyc. We also have some other contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our social media post, as well as on our episode description. So that way you can keep tabs about where the show is going next, as well as Victoria's new show coming soon. But right now, if you're in the New York City area, or you're coming to the New York City area, or you need a reason to come to the New York City area, head over to Under St. Mark's, get your tickets via frigid.nyc. This is a show you are not going to want to miss at the New York City Fringe Festival. It's The Princess Strikes Back, April 15th, 20th, and 21st. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.